This is Soho Radio. With B.B. Lynch.
Hello everyone, what a beautiful day. It's as beautiful as the new Brexit deadline, Halloween. I'd like to stick a candle in all those pumpkins. Hey, I'm B.B. Lynch and you're listening to B.B. Does Soho on your fantastic Soho Radio. I'm all yours the next 2 hours. Shall we do it? Got a little bit,
yeah,
a bit racy at the end there. I'm B.B. Lynch, and that was Michelle Gale and Sweetness. Guess which soap Michelle Gale was in producing?
Well, I actually know the answer.
Oh,
to
what was it?
It was EastEnders.
Oh, and what was her character?
I have no idea, but I remember that record coming out a long time ago.
How long?
Oh, it would have been the '90s.
Oh, the '90s. Yeah. Hey, how are you? What's been happening? Me, I'm on a diet.
Again.
And I'm doing it, Project B.B.
Oh yeah,
because I walk past. I don't have. Tell me, I don't have a full length mirror at home. It's weird, right? When I look up
You don't
up
need
there,
a full-length mirror,
when
to
I
be
look,
fair.
Because I'm short.
Well, yeah.
If I look up here above the microphone, there's a little mirror. I can see my eye.
Oh, there you go.
So I don't have a full-length mirror at home, but I walked past a shop window the other day and saw my reflection.
Mm.
So I not only ironically look pregnant, my legs look pregnant too. Twins. I'm having
Yeah,
leg
but
twins.
I mean, remember shop windows, they're like the Hall of Mirrors sort of.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think they give you a false impression.
To make you look slimmer.
Well, they could if they go the other way. They could make you look a bit more dumpy than you really are. So don't pay too much attention to
I'm counting calories, and I've decided to... So I will have breakfast, I will have lunch, I will have dinner to stop the binging. How many calories in a raspberry?
One?
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
How
crazy
is that? That was a wild guess. So one per raspberry?
One calorie per raspberry.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have 12,000 raspberries a day. And blueberries have less than a calorie.
But do remember, people make the mistake. Calories are energy. That's what gives you energy.
Yeah.
What you need to burn off. Whereas what would control your weight would be your carb intake.
Oh, here we go. That's not true.
And sugars. Sugars that tend to carb.
So it's fruit sugar, fructose.
Yes, it's highly...
Highly toxic.
Highly toxic. Oh, I see. Sweetness. There was a link there.
Well, this is what I found, actually. Since I've decided to do Project BB,
you don't just throw
there's
this
about
together,
three songs in here that have got sweet in it. Let me tell you about today's show. Our first guests, this is very exciting, are the Richard and Judy of Soho Radio. It's me and producer Nick. And in the second hour, we'll be joined...
Is that because we couldn't find a guest for the
much.
First hour?
And in the second hour, we'll be joined by pianist, actor, songwriter,
legend,
Mr. Bobby Crush. Unbelievable.
Sir Robert of Crush.
Please join in. I can't wait. Tweet at Soho. I met him at a party once, and I'm going to do that awful thing of saying, do you remember? And he's going to have to pretend yes, and he won't.
What if he does? You are quite memorable.
I am. So please join with my pregnant size.
You'll walk in and go, it's you!
So join in. Tweet at Soho Radio and at BB Lynch. Tweet and say hello. Or tweet and tell me how many large bananas I should have in a day. This is BB Does Soho on Soho Radio Culture, sohoradiolondon.com. And click on Culture. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. I said app like I was 80. And app.
application.
And such as Soho.
Twice daily.
And that was Anne Peebles, and I'm going to tear your playhouse down. What a talented family, Anne and Andy.
Yeah, and of course Paul Young did that song.
Oh, too, delicious Paul Young. You know my my producer, you're my producer. You know my postman, Steve, looks like Paul Young.
I don't know your postman, Steve.
Oh, he's gorgeous.
I am willing to believe that.
Yeah,
does he look like Paul Young now, or does he look like Paul Young used
Paul
to
Young
look?
Now. Okay. Paul Young now. And he looks
so
like...
just an older man with silver hair.
He's very handsome. He's got
he didn't have the sort of no parlay spiky...
No, but he's got the really great nostrils that look like he's kind of... snarling a bit, you know, permanently like that. Like Stacey Slater in Enders has those. But Steve will always wear a shirt.
So your postman looks like a woman in EastEnders who's snarling.
Oh, this got dark. You know how Elvis had like nostrils that always were flaring, not snarling, flaring.
Oh, flaring.
Flaring. Okay. So anyway, so Steve looks like Paul Young with his with Stacey nostrils, Elvis hair. But he always wears a short sleeve shirt, which is very, very, you know, because it's so cold down there sometimes. And I saw him the other week in the road parallel to mine.
Do you suppose anyone's still listening?
I don't care. And he went, hello, darling. And I went, Steve, I don't like seeing you on this road. I feel like you're cheating. And he went, don't you start. So there's a story. I think Steve's been naughty. Yeah, that was a song. Guess what? Our first guests are here. Welcome to Soho Radio. Barbara Leach and Ryan Gosling.
Oh, don't start the Ryan Gosling thing.
You love the Ryan Gosling thing.
Well, of course, it's very flattering, but it's ridiculous.
So where did that happen? How did that happen?
Your friend Eve,
yeah,
who we met last week,
yeah.
She just randomly said to me that I reminded her of Ryan Gosling.
Have you heard that before?
Which was very sweet of her, but I think she may have been drinking.
No, it's morning. She was on decaf. You do look like Ryan Gosling. Have you ever gone a beard route? Have you ever done a beard?
No, not really.
Why?
I don't know. Sometimes I'm quite lazy and don't shave for a few days. Yeah. But the full kind of Swedish lumberjack come...
Don't like it.
Imam isn't really my
Is it
my
itchy?
Thing. Yeah, I feel unclean and it's itchy.
Do you?
I don't like it.
You're unclean anyway, mate. The beard's at least your
problems. Unclean.
Who else have you been told you look like?
That's a good question. I don't really. It doesn't really happen to me. What about you? Let me throw that question back at you.
I've had so many.
Really?
Jane McDonald.
Of The Cruise. Fabulous. Well, somebody actually thought you were Jane McDonald.
Just said I look like Jane McDonald.
Cher, was this on Tinder?
Cher before the surgery, when she had the nose and teeth. Nanny McPhee, obviously, but
obviously,
that's mine. The best one?
Yeah.
On this show, were you here? I'm not sure if you were here. And it was a woman doing a TV roundup preview, and she, in the middle, she just went, God, you really like Sonia from EastEnders.
Oh, I even know who that is.
And what do you think?
I don't know many of your EastEnders references.
Do I look like Sonia from EastEnders?
No, I think that's a bit unfair, to be honest.
I'd like to. Who'd you like to look like?
Who would I? I'm happy looking like me.
Because you look like Ryan Gosling. I'd like to look like Isabella Rossellini. And I've kind of got the crooked tooth at the front. Yeah. So,
for an older lady now, she is amazing. She's so charismatic and attractive.
And hot. And,
and stylish. Yeah. And,
I interviewed two women the other day on I have a BBC show after the Watershed, BBC Sussex, BBC Surrey, Wednesdays 9 till 10.
I still can't believe what? The BBC let you on.
I know, I don't know what, I think they think I'm Jane McDonald. They're like, yeah, we've got Sonia from
EastEnders.
Doing
it for 5 months, still haven't sung anything.
And what was I saying? Oh, yeah, I interviewed two, Ali and I, Alison Ferns, the brilliant Alison Ferns, and I interviewed two women who are in their 80s and still having healthy sex lives.
Really?
Oh, that's the phone. That's the police. Who was that?
People are tweeting.
Oh, okay, cool. People are tweeting. And what was cool about that was, and I obviously Googled both of them, and not that it matters, but they both looked great and really hot, and I love that. I love that there's, you know, age is no limit.
You think it's the other way around? Do you think, well, it's a sort of chicken and egg thing. Do you think if you are being active and healthy and sexual later on, that's what keeps you
could be
virile and
vibrant? They had the glow and they were super funny and super brilliant, and I just thought I left the studio feeling less upset about the fact that I'm 72.
Yeah.
How's your week been?
It's been busy actually, but not bad.
Nice things, legal things.
Legal things, yeah. This and that.
You have to say what you do. What do you do?
I spend the entire week...
daydreaming about me.
Yeah, looking forward to the show.
Yeah.
People don't really want to hear us rabbiting
don't
away.
Don't they?
I don't think. I think we should just play some music.
Let's play another sweet track.
So which is this one? Would you like to introduce your sweet track?
This is The Man Who Wasn't Elvis. It's Neil Diamond and Sweet Caroline.
Where it began, I can't begin to knowing, but then I know it's growing strong. Wasn't the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Don't seem so lonely. We fill it up with only two. And when I hurt, hurting runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? Touching warm, reaching out, touching me, touching you.
See Will.
Oh yeah.
Is Will eating something?
Yeah.
What's he eating?
I don't know. He's looking at us now.
Is he?
Yeah.
Well, it's because he shouldn't
gonna
be
mean
eating.
Anything to anyone. He doesn't.
It's very good
Will.
Looking,
Will, who Will's who handsome. Works here at
who does Will look like?
Oh, that's a good point. He looks like somebody. A little bit like Ryan Gosling, perhaps.
Will looks like Ryan Gosling.
I don't know.
He doesn't. I bet Will looks like Daddy Will. Or Mummy Will.
We are on air.
Oh.
Live on Soho Radio.
Live on
Please
Soho
tweet,
Radio. Can I just ask you something personal?
Suggestions.
For new presenters. You know, you just said that you nixed my Project BB, because it's a whole project, so I'm not mm-hmm. just losing weight.
What's the rest of it?
I don't know. I might get a new ring. Might get a hair grip. but you. So, do you remember when you rang me up and told me I was fat?
This is not correct. I said that I was doing the keto diet and I'd lost some weight because I had a little bit of a muffin top and I wanted to look trim and slim for the summer. And I just said it's working really well and it's an interesting thing. You should try it.
And then you did a
pig. So that's
noise.
Different.
Then you
slightly different from saying you look fat.
So how does your diet work?
Well, I did it for a couple of months, but you basically cut out all carbohydrates.
That's it?
Yeah, so you're basically just eating fats and...
Protein.
Won't
you get a heart attack?
It's probably not good to do long term, because it might be bad for your cholesterol. But there's loads online about it. Check it out. Keto.
Check it out.
But I lost something like 6 kilos in about 3 weeks.
Incredible. Did you? Incredible. And you've kept it off, haven't you?
Ish.
Have you kept it off, ish?
I didn't really. I put it back on at Christmas.
So Project BB, what's upsetting me is that I'm meeting loads of my siblings this weekend, and that's it. That's what's upsetting me. Now, what's upsetting me is there's going to be food, and I'm on a roll.
Yeah.
Not a bread roll. And I don't want to eat. Do you want to ask me about my MRI?
Tell me about your MRI.
I'm fine.
Good. I've selected a load of really great music because basically we're killing time until the guest arrives. Yeah. But I mean...
I've got something to ask you in a minute.
Oh.
Play a track that you want to play and then I want to ask you
something. Okay, well...
It's very important.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Let me choose something that you will love. What do you think? What do you think you'll...
The Osmonds.
Really? No. How about this one?
I love it. Who was it?
William Devorne. Be thankful for what you've got.
William Devorne. Doesn't know he's born.
Massive Attack did it, but that was the original.
I know. I only knew it from Massive Attack. Is that bad? Well, it's because I'm young.
Yeah. It's like you think One Way or Another is a One Direction song, don't you? As opposed to Blondie.
I didn't know they'd even done it.
Oh, yeah, they have.
No.
Yeah,
are they still together?
No.
What? Who, Blondie? Blondie are. I saw Blondie in the soft area at BBC Radio London. That was actually really exciting.
The soft area?
Yeah. Yeah. Have you been there often recently?
The last time I went was with you.
Oh, what were we doing? Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, tell me. So, listen, I had something I was going to ask Nick, but I'm not allowed to say it. So, let's go.
This is going really well, isn't it?
I don't care anymore. Do you think I got the lady on Gatwick Express in trouble?
Oh, tell me, what happened?
So I,
this is your regular...
This is my regular
BB's travel woes spot.
Because Southern... Talking of spots, my chin has gone really... My skin's...
Keep the point. Other rail companies are available.
We can't call it a rail company. So Southern, today, miraculously, all the trains were running on time. I mean, it was a joyful thing. Everyone in Brighton and Hove were thrilled. But the ticket machines weren't working. It was like, okay, and there's everyone, dozens and dozens of people queuing around every single ticket machine, and one poor bloke in a little, you know, little high-vis walking around. Anyway, managed to get a ticket, got on the train, blah, blah, and then spoke to the woman, and I just said, why are there... I can't let things go. There's something wrong with me. I said, why are there no tickets?
You're annoyed of Hove.
But really, yes, harassed of Hove. And she went, still, that was happening yesterday. I had loads of emails, so it's not even a new thing. They just can't be bothered to fix it. I hate them.
There's no punchline or comedy payoff to this.
No, my worry is, I tweeted about it and I said, the fabulous supervisor on Gatwick Express just told me. So now I'm thinking, what if someone at Southern sits there and works out the train time and who the supervisor would have been and gets the sack?
They haven't even got time to run the trains properly. Then they're not going to employ somebody that's going to do that level of in-depth
investigation. What are you doing for Easter?
I haven't even thought about it yet.
What do you usually do?
Very little.
Do you like Christ?
I know nothing of these things. It's a mystery to me, all this Jesus stuff. I have no idea.
I had hot cross bun fudge recently, before Project BB. Mm-hmm. You going to stay in London?
Yo, there's all these random non sequiturs. I don't know what you're talking about.
Are you going to stay in London?
I will be staying in London, yes, at home. Yeah.
Do you have people over?
I haven't planned to. Are you angling for an invite?
Oh, I have plans. I'm seeing my crazy family.
Ask me about the gift of music.
What's the gift of music?
Well, normally you say that you give me the gift of music.
I do give you the gift of music. And do you know what?
What?
You've never let me down.
Have I not?
You've never let me down.
I might do now.
Yeah, okay. So once again, because I'm a very giving, I think it's because I'm Pisces, very giving person. Mm. And we love music. Nick and I, Ryan and I adore the music. And so I, every show, say, Nick, I can't just be in charge of the music because, you know, let's share, let's spread the love. So please, what have you chosen?
Well, as I always say, every time we talk about this, it's not really a free choice.
Right.
Because if I chose something that you didn't like or I thought you wouldn't like, you would. You would take it very badly. Yeah. So I always feel I have to choose things that you will like.
Yeah.
You know, that William Devon that we just played.
Yeah, so you don't like that?
No, I love it.
So you hate it?
But I knew that you would love it.
Oh, I did love it.
I wonder if you'll like this.
I hate it.
This is a track by Lissy, who is an American singer-songwriter, but this is her cover version of Fleetwood Mac's Go Your Own Way.
Let's hear it.
So it's a very quiet start.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, here we go. I think you might like this.
Everyone.
Isn't the right thing to do? How can I ever change things that I feel? If I could, maybe I'd give you my world. How can I, when you won't take it from me?
I loved it. I really loved it.
Oh, wow. I thought maybe I was going a bit too left field for you there.
No, she...
That was Lissy. L-I-S-S-I-E, Lissy. She's an American singer.
How did you happen upon Lissy?
And her version of Go Your Own Way. I've sort of been aware of her anyway, but she recently did a version of another Fleetwood Mac song. She did Everywhere.
Yeah.
As a piano version.
Ooh.
And was it Everywhere or was it Dreams? Or one of those, anyway. And then I was sort of looking, and then I found this. I found that she'd done this.
Does she do her own stuff? This was from a few years ago.
Yeah, she does a lot of her own stuff.
Do we prefer her covers?
I don't know a lot about her own stuff. I just really liked that.
It's
kind of dark and brooding.
Thank you. Made me think of you. Thank you. So some big news today.
Yes.
Not just Brexit.
Oh, not Brexit.
Oh, not Brexit.
Bremaine.
Julian Assange.
Oh, Julian Assange.
Assange. Being arrested.
Yes, apparently he was dragged out, screaming.
Oh, so that makes me feel so uncomfortable. So, like, are we thinking mental health issues now? Because has he been in a room?
I mean, I don't know.
Well,
I think he's been locked in the Ecuadorian embassy for several years with a cat. He had a cat for company.
Yeah.
But apparently the Ecuadorians have granted the cat asylum, so the cat won't have to
Are you teasing?
No, I read it earlier.
Where did you read it?
It was on Twitter, so it must be true.
So the cat's okay, and he's been arrested, not just dragged out, but actually arrested.
Yes, arrested, because he's required in Sweden to answer some charges of sexual harassment.
Yeah. So Pamela Anderson's his girlfriend.
I knew she visited him. I didn't appreciate that she was his... His squeeze.
I might have made that up. But does she take the... No, but I'm sure she said it...
A supporter of his.
I think she said it was a romantic involvement.
Oh.
Do you think she, under her arm, I'm sure she doesn't wear the red bathing suit,
but do you think she takes the...
just a little float. you've met her.
Yeah, I did an award show with her once, and she was actually... I was thinking she might be difficult or a bit of a diva, but she was charming and really lovely and very down to earth and, chatty and pleasant.
How did she get involved with Julian Assange?
I have no idea. I would imagine sort of political affiliation.
Twitter.
Yeah. But, she's Canadian, of course.
Of course.
So, you know, that's why.
Why?
Well, as they always say, all the nice Americans turn out to be Canadian.
Ryan Gosling's Canadian.
Exactly.
Matthew Perry.
And we come full circle, Matthew Perry. Yeah.
Should I tell you when I went to LA to find Matthew Perry?
I don't know the story. I thought I knew all your stories.
I didn't find him.
No.
But I did go to LA. Well,
but what was the Matthew Perry thing?
I loved him. Total crush on him.
And you went specifically to seek him?
That was the dream in my head. You know when you put things out into the universe?
Mm.
Now it's that I'll drop half a stone.
You just hang around, you know, like a...
I honestly...
Like Carl's Jr. somewhere in Los Angeles.
And
Matthew Perry would come in for a burger.
I did. I went to Chateau Marmont.
Yeah.
So, and,
was he there?
No, Eddie Izzard was. Mm. No, I went to quite a few places. The kind of Brit scene there is such that actually you do bump into everyone.
Yeah.
It was, who was the bloke? Who's that actor?
Yeah, Hollywood. Who's that actor?
He's British.
Yeah.
Ben Chaplin.
Oh, yeah.
He was there.
Yeah, he lives there.
Oh, he lives there. Mm. Delicious.
Yes. Sorry, I thought you were going to...
No, I'm just going to see how long we can do it. Do silence.
Do you want another one of my lovely records?
Yeah. Play one that you think I won't like. Well, actually, that was
that was all the things I've selected. I think you're going to love.
Play a song. Which song would you play for our first dance at our wedding?
Divorce. I know. I think I would play. This one.
You little trust maker. Yes, sir. You're no heartbreaker. You little trust maker. you're no heartbreaker. Yes,
no heartbreaker, sir.
You little trust maker.
Yes, sir.
You're no heartbreaker. You little trust maker.
Soho on Soho Radio.
Taste it.
You are listening to BB Does Soho on Soho Radio, sohoradiolondon.com. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. Producer Nick.
Yes.
What was that track?
That was Glenn Frey from the Eagles. I know you like the Eagles.
I love the Eagles.
That was a solo track from him called You Belong to the City, which made me think of you.
Oh no, don't say that, because you know I have my wibbles. And also I miss London.
Oh yeah, you moved out, didn't you?
I moved out. So our guest, I'm going to say hello to our guest, okay, because I need to give our guest an apology.
Oh really?
Mr. Bobby Crush.
In the flesh.
Welcome to Soho Radio.
Thank you.
Can I please apologise? First of all, we have no sweeteners.
I know. And here I am trying to lose weight and you're attempting to entice me with sugar.
I know. That's the least I could do.
You see, I want cheekbones by September.
Oh, good. Okay. Why September?
It's just a,
Brexit.
Just a date that I've set myself. Yeah.
I want Brexit.
It keeps getting delayed, like Brexit. Yeah.
So I owe Bobby an apology. Bobby's going to be phenomenal after one. But Bobby, so there's a band performing Cutting Straight live to vinyl at the front of Soho Radio. That's so brilliant. But I should have said to you, Bobby, there's a band.
Well, I sussed what was going on, because as I came through the door, there was musicians playing and what have you, and there was mics set up and what have you. So I thought, oh, something's going on here, so I shall remain stum.
Oh, you did good.
So I'm a pro, for goodness sake.
You didn't push the pianist out of the way. And just
no,
go
I didn't. The background with a triangle or a chime bar.
The pianist seemed quite good, so
really?
I was keeping a keen eye on him.
Oh, that's really good.
It's always good to keep an eye out for the competition.
Is this your first time at Soho Radio?
It most certainly is, but it's certainly not my first time in Soho, because I'm an old hand at this area, which I'll tell you more about later.
We'll hear about that in a minute.
Oh, yes, yes.
So, Bobby, you've never met me before, but I understand. I can imagine just by meeting me instantly, you know how generous I am.
Yes. It's something that I can see, yes. Yes, I think. Something that I can feel.
What I keep... sorry about that, Bobby. What I keep doing today, and usually I do it once a show as our gift, producer Nick, the gift of music. And today, how many songs have you had?
I've had two so far. So, but the next one's yours,
can
actually.
I have the next
yeah,
one?
Yeah, I think you should have the next
one. Okay. In a way, Nick and I are the Aretha Franklin, the Stevie Wonder of Soho Radio.
Okay.
So I think
I've... And in a way, we're not.
Yes, yeah. here's the way we're not.
Written and produced by Mr. Stevie Wonder. Called me late one night and said, Ree, I got a song for you. I said, I'll take it. He said, send somebody down to get it. Yeah,
Sound good.
Well, I'm gonna
tap on your door.
Tap on your window.
one you can sing, Aretha.
Tap on your window, man.
Tap on your window.
Open up the steam.
Tap on your
window.
Tap on, tap on, tap on, tap on your window.
Tap on your window.
Soho. Lucky Soho.
Shaka Khan. and Like Sugar. Hello, welcome to the second hour of BB Does Soho. I'm BB Lynch and you're listening to Soho Radio Culture, sohoradiolondon.com, and click on Culture and we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. Coming to you from our beautifully bijou pop-up and studio on Great Windmill Street. Come down and say hello. If you're too shy to say hi, tweet us at Soho Radio or at BB Lynch. I am not reading. We would love to hear from you. So the brilliant Barbara and Ryan,
yes,
entertained us with nonsense. I wouldn't say stroke gold, but yeah.
Good music.
Nonsense, good music for an hour. And in a few minutes, well, actually, he's here already. Britain's top piano entertainer, showbiz god, Mr. Bobby Crush. But first, ladies and gents, it's, yes, Bobby Crush and Borsellino.
Pointingly fades there.
Well, when I do that song in live performance, of course, I do tag it. It has a proper ending, but you know, most singles in the 70s faded, yeah. So we went with the plan.
So you were saying when that was playing, that was your first session.
Yes, immediately after I did a television show called Opportunity Knocks, I was invited by Philips Records to make my first album, and that was part of the sessions. In the end, it wasn't put on the album, but it was released as a single, and it went top 40.
Yeah, amazing. Oh, yes. In 72.
In 1972, when I was 18 years old.
Oh, when you were two. When you weren't, not even, I mean, how do the math? It's so brilliant to meet you.
Thank
we're
you.
We're so glad that you've said you'd come on the show and you're here.
Well, it's only up the road. I mean,
don't say where you live, but where
no,
do you live?
No, it's all right. I can tell you the general area. I live in Waterloo.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Just up from
Platform
the old...
five.
Platform five, yes. Third bench on the right.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
Well, I moved there about 9 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm originally an East End boy. And with
Leighton,
every,
aren't you?
Yeah, with every move that I've made, I've come further and further into town. And it had always been an ambition in my life that at some point I would live really centrally.
Yeah.
And when I moved from my previous house, which was in Hendon, in northwest London, friends of mine, they were absolutely split down the middle. Some people said, oh, you're going to love it. You know, it's a really good move for you because you go to the theatre a lot. You go to restaurants a lot because I don't cook and all that. And, oh, you're going to be right on top of everything. It's going to be marvellous. And then there was another clutch of friends that said, oh, this is a beautiful house. You've got, you know, a conservatory and a garden, and you're going to move from here to downsize and live in a two-bedroom apartment in a really busy, noisy area.
The dream.
And I'd only been in my flat about 24 hours, and I thought, my goodness, why didn't I do this years ago? Because it's just so easy getting everywhere. I mean, I went for dinner the other night at Joe Allen's on the Strand and walked home. Because all I had to do was walk over Waterloo Bridge and a little bit further up the road.
Honestly, I'm going to have to ban you for talking about this because I'm a Londoner, but I've moved to Hove.
Hove actually.
Yeah. And it is beautiful. And as I say to Nick, I just have my wibbles. I miss London, but I'm straddling. I'm I'm
1 foot in London.
I'm Hove and I'm Soho. I'm Ho-Ho, yeah. is how I'm thinking it. But seeing as you've got a two-bedroom, I'll stay over. I'll use your spare room.
Oh, well, I have to tell you that my spare bedroom has been turned into a music room or an office, and it's where I keep my piano and where I do my practice.
I'm short.
But there's this floor space. You can keep on the floor in the sleeping bag if you're so inclined.
When you said it, so why don't you cook? I don't cook.
I'm shocking. I'm the king of the microwave. I go to M&S once a week and I fill up my trolley. And if it doesn't go in the microwave, it just gets bought.
It just doesn't get bought.
Well, and funnily enough, I bumped into Greg Wallace the other day. And
did he shout?
Greg!
He can't, he always shouts! He does always shout!
Hello, Bobby! And I'd met him a few weeks ago at the Wolseley. He said, oh, nice to see you again. Oh, he said, I'm a big fan of your music. He said, I love piano playing. And we just talked about things in general. And then he paused and said, do you cook?
Oh, no, you know
and
what he
I
wanted
said,
you
oh,
for.
Greg, I said, it would have disaster written all over it. I said, because, you know, I'm just hopeless. There are about three things that I can do, and then it all goes horribly pear-shaped. And he said, oh, no, he said, I'm going to have to get you on the show, he said, because, he said, that's half the fun. He said, when people mess up, he said, public love that.
Bobby, do
so
it.
So I don't know.
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong. You're anyway, not tempted at all.
I put him in touch with my agent, so who knows? From a chance meeting like that might come a pretty disastrous television appearance in the not too distant future.
and then a series about your cooking.
Oh, no.
Bobby, crushed pepper. We can get some. We've got to use the crush.
Crushed chilies.
Crushed chilies. Yeah. There's a range.
Crushed potatoes.
Yeah. Okay, we want 20%.
Orange each. Crush.
Orange crush. There you go. Listen.
Yes. The possibilities are endless.
Crushed M&S packages.
So we were going to. So Bobby is friend of Friendo Show, Russ Kane, who won't stop harassing
who
me on
frankly
Facebook.
Frankly, has been on too much.
He's. I think who we is should. He? Who keeps booking him?
Yeah, I think we're you.
Oh. Is he a stalker?
Oh.
Does he
does too much. You know, he's on to plug his book or he's on to plug his comedy show.
New
or
radio
he's on
station.
To talk about his radio station. You think it's just like, you know, he's an overachiever.
I half expected to see him here today as I walked through the door.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh,
yeah, he'll be hanging out.
He'll be hanging out. Some Bourbons. He loves a Bourbon.
In an aeroplane.
Anyway, so we were So Russ is saying, get Bobby on, and we were going to talk about your amazing show, An Evening with Bobby Crush and His Musicians at Brasserie Zadel, but there's no need because it's sold out.
It is sold out, and in fact, it's been sold out about 4 or 5 weeks now.
That's amazing.
Congratulations. That's
thank you very much.
Fantastic.
Thank you. Life in the old dog, yeah.
West End sold out. If we
talk about it, it's like a really nasty kind of teasing thing to do, so I insist we talk about it. What's going to
Absolutely. I'm sure that you must have seen shows at Zadel before now.
There.
It's a lovely room. This will be about my third or fourth time there. And I'm lucky to have quite a loyal following who they call themselves Crushettes. So there'll be a lot of the Crushettes there on the 20th. And it'll just I take a three-piece band in with me. I have a synthesizer player who is my musical director, a bass guitarist and a drummer, and myself on a big grand piano. And I basically just play I'm doing some new material actually at ZL because knowing that a lot of the same people are going to come back to see me who were at the last shows, I can't keep trotting out the same old rubbish. So
I wish you'd tell Russ Kane that.
That's you off the Christmas card list. So I'm going to be doing a huge Michel Legrand medley.
Oh wow. And he recently passed away.
He did. Well, funnily enough, the The day that I started putting the medley together, they announced his death. So I don't know if that was... I don't know whether that was his cue to say...
I killed Luther Vandross in the same kind of situation.
Yeah?
Anyway, carry on.
So I'm doing some Sergio Mendes. Yeah. I'm opening with Mascanada. And I'll be doing some Burt Bacharach.
Oh. Well, you did a whole tour of Bacharach.
I did a show called Back to Bacharach, which I took out on the road with a 13-piece orchestra. And Linda Nolan from the Nolan Sisters. Hey. And Danny Williams, who had a big hit with Moon River. And we went around the country with it. And it's the music of my youth, you know, those songs like Walk On By and Anyone Who Had a Heart and
Just Extraordinary.
I'll Never Fall In Love Again.
Amazing.
I mean, they're brilliantly constructed
songs. So how do you choose
songs?
what you're going to play? What's the criteria for you?
Well, as an instrumentalist, I always aim for anything that is strong musically. So when I'm choosing new material, lyrics are not really a consideration. I want things with big fat chords, and the one thing that I will say about my act is that there's familiarity. People love to hear songs that they know and love. Yeah. I'm not out to educate. I'm out to entertain, which has always been the case ever since I came into the business back in the dark ages. So I just want everybody to have a good time. I mean, they've said before now, at ZL, why don't you just come in and do a solo show, just you at the piano, and you know, it means that you save on the expense of having a band and all of that. And I said, well, no, I want to put on a show. I want to give something, you know, back to the audience. And, you know, to have a drummer and a bass player and a synth player, it just kind of lifts the whole thing.
Do you get nervous when you play?
Do you know, it might sound terribly arrogant to say this, but I don't ever, because I think I'm so used to it. It's been such a part of my life since I was... Well, I started playing in front of the public when I was 12 years old. So, you know, I've never known a time really that I haven't been out there and doing it. The only time that I get a bit nervous is if I'm in a live situation on TV, like if you do something like Sunday Night at the London Palladium. Mm. And I was a little bit... this time last year, I was in a television show called Last Laugh in Vegas.
Yes.
And to make my debut at 64 in Las Vegas was a big deal. And I was quite nervous doing that. But in the main, if it's a regular concert... Well, one of the things that I learned very early on in my career is that if you get nervous and you get a bit wound up and your hands begin to shake and all of that, that doesn't do the performance any good whatsoever. So I had to talk myself out of feeling that way in front of an audience, because I wanted always to be able to give them my best.
And enjoy it yourself.
Yeah.
Rescue and, remedy.
And the thing is that if you come out with a bum note, you know, nobody's died. It's, you know, it's fine. You know, you play a wrong chord somewhere and there's a horrible clash. You just go, ooh, for about 2 seconds and you just plow on. So, no, I've always been quite a confident kind of person, and I think that is probably evident in my playing style and my approach.
So Opportunity Knocks, when was that?
1972.
And you won 6 times.
I did. I mean, when I talk to young people about it, of course, they have no knowledge of it whatsoever. So I always say, well, it was like the precursor to The X Factor.
Yeah.
And it had the same kind of impact.
Yeah.
And
it was huge.
It was huge, and it was probably even huger than X Factor, because these days, if you get an audience of, you know, 6 or 7 million, they reckon you're doing extremely well. Well, of course, when I did Opportunity Knocks, there were only 3 stations.
Yeah.
So there wasn't the choice that there is now. So we were averaging like 15 million people, 15, 16, every week. So for a new performer like me, I mean, it was a great springboard.
So you were 18 when you did Opportunity Knocks.
I was 18,
but 12 when you actually started doing performing for public.
I've been playing the piano since I was 4 years old. My first experience of performing was school reviews, and then from there, when I was a teenager, I went into concert parties. And we used to go around London parks, open air shows, and they'd put a piano on a bandstand, and I'd play in these open air spaces. When I was 15, 16, I started playing in pubs in the East End, which were probably highly illegal, but I did it anyway. And when I was 16, I auditioned for Opportunity Knocks, And I passed the audition then and there. But because it was such a popular program, there was a huge waiting list.
Oh, right.
There was a full 2 years between my audition and when I actually got on.
They used that line on me.
Yeah.
But you got on.
Different reasons.
Okay.
How were the pubs? Did it go down well in the pubs? Or did have any? It wasn't tough crowd. You didn't have
bottles thrown. No, they were great. It was a really, really good learning experience because that's where I widened my repertoire. I've always known a lot of songs because I learn pieces by ear. I don't read music particularly well. No, not well. I don't sight read. If I want to learn a new song, I buy the CD and I listen to it and work out the chords and away we go. But in the pubs, I went to the pubs already with quite a lot of songs in my pocket. But if I got there and one of the regulars would say, do you know such and such a song? And I didn't, I would then make it my business to find out about that song in the coming week so that when I went back the next week I could play
See, that's
them.
Again pleasing the audience. That's so cool. That's, they're there. Were your family musical?
I come from a completely non-musical family. My brother can't sing two notes together on a scale. It's unbelievable. But he paints really well.
Ah.
No, I can't paint to save my life. Yeah. I mean, we all of us have our own areas of excellence.
Yeah.
But the piano thing has always been totally natural to me. I mean, how I started playing, just to tell you briefly, my grandparents used to have an upright piano in their parlour. In Canning Town, in the East End. They used to call it the parlour. But a lot of families used to have pianos, and they were there as items of furniture as opposed to, you know, the fact that anybody in the household could actually play the thing. And my grandparents used to use this piano to put pot plants on top of it and photo frames and all of that. And I obviously don't remember this, but my mum and dad used to tell me that when I visited my grandparents, I used to lift up the piano lid. And most kids who are confronted with a piano keyboard for the first time will bash at it to make as much noise out of it as they can. But I'm told that I used to single-fingeredly pick out little tunes.
So it was all
And
there.
Then my canny mother and father, realising that perhaps there was some degree of musical talent there, persuaded my grandparents to transfer the piano over from their house to ours.
Wow.
And the moment that it became part of our household, I was on it every day.
I absolutely love it.
And I just got better and better. And I played by ear up until the age of 8. And then I had formal training for 6 years thereafter.
That's so cool.
And that's how I started playing. I mean, had that piano not been in my grandparents' house, who knows... You know, I would probably have found a piano at school later on in life.
But this consumed you, you're able to do that.
I was exposed to it so early that it was really beneficial.
Listen to this, producer Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Crush in front of us, right? Famous for 45 years. I mean, that's, So
Infamous.
Primarily as a pianist, but also a songwriter, actor and broadcaster. So listen to this, Nick. So Bobby's debut album, Bobby Crush, reached the top 20.
Yep.
Released 13 albums, been awarded 3 gold discs, appeared in many West End musicals, had hit one-man shows, including the internationally acclaimed Liberace Live from Heaven, starred in Royal Variety performances. This is amazing. Been added to the Palladium's Roll of Honour.
Oh,
I love that.
Oh, the photographs outside.
That's incredible.
Well, unfortunately, the Roll of Honour has just been replaced.
If
you go to the stage show at the Palladium now, they've put this new thing up.
There's a screen there.
There's a big screen. With people like Bruce Forsyth and Judy Garland and Frank Sinatra and what have you. But prior to the screen going up, there was a Roll of Honour at the stage door that where you could read about people that had made more than 3 or 4 appearances at the Palladium in their careers. But that has now gone. But I believe that that is now actually at the stage door entrance.
They wouldn't have got rid of that.
No, they haven't got rid of it. But
I think it's been moved.
Yeah. It's not.
Do you want me to write a letter?
I want you to go down there in person and
scrub out all the others, the others out.
But I have to, because we're on Soho Radio and we're talking about this area and what have you, I must just tell you about the Palladium, because it's a strange story that I think very few people can actually lay claim to. Before I did Opportunity Knocks, I was the office boy for Leslie Grade Limited at 113 Wardour Street, just around the corner, Hammer House. And I was there for about a year. And my job as the office boy was to go to the Palladium nearly every week with wages and mail and delivering packages and what have you, because Lady Gride, who I worked for at that time, put a lot of the shows into the Palladium. So I got to know the stage door keeper, George Cooper, and I got to know a lot of people that were attached to the building in my office boy capacity. Then you scroll on a year, I've done Opportunity Knocks, and my first professional engagement away from the show was to go and support Jack Jones for 2 weeks at the London Palladium.
Oh, that is unbelievable.
So one year I'm delivering packages there, and then the following year I'm walking through the stage door as Jack Jones's co-star.
That must have made your heart go.
Well, it's a bit of a turn up for the books, isn't it? And it just goes to show how your life can turn on a sixpence.
Your mum and dad must be so proud.
They were very chuffed, yeah. I mean, neither of them are with me now, but I'm very happy to say that they saw a lot of really good things happen for me. They saw me make my Palladium debut. They were in the audience the night that I did the Royal Variety performance. You know, they saw the gold disc being handed over. You know, they were very chuffed.
It's so amazing. Yeah. I love those stories. And just so when you were like a kid in Leighton and you've done all these discs and the Palladium, everything, did you think that it was always obviously going to be showbiz for you?
Always.
That was always going to be that. Yeah. But did you think you'd get to this level? Do you think all this would happen? Because you do TV, Benidorm, you know, everything.
Well, I sussed pretty early on that the key to longevity in our business is to diversify. So I knew that the piano thing possibly wouldn't sustain me through a 47-year career, which is what I've had. I decided to do other things as well. Within my first year of being in the business, I got offered my first pantomime, in which I knew I was going to have to sing, dance, act. So I went to lessons for all of these things. I went to elocution lessons. And I took it seriously. Yeah. You know, the one thing that I feel sorry for with people that are coming into the business now, like X Factor winners, they have this huge success early on. They have the album, they have the plaudits and what have you. But very often they have a year or an 18-month career, and then they kind of fade away because there aren't the avenues now for them to frequent. Like I went on to do the club scene, which back in the 70s was very thriving, you know, places like the Bailey Circuit and the Fiesta clubs and all of that. And those venues aren't there anymore. So that's how I learnt my craft. Mm. New performers, you think, well, how do they actually get the experience?
Well, I was just going to say that, because not only do they have the instant fame, but you had X number of years, you know, starting at four to build up to that.
Oh, yeah.
So what was your... So from day before, no one knows you. Next day, your opportunity knocks. The day after, you know, what was happening on the streets? Were people coming up to you? What was happening?
They were. I mean, it was very strange because... from me working for Leslie Grade, I mean, Leslie Grade, along with his brother Lou Grade and Bernard Delfont, the three of them in the 70s...
ran it all.
Well, they controlled show business and what have you. And so from my working for Leslie started working for me because he became my manager. And
this is the best story ever.
He was, and it's all true.
I bet he had a few things to say about that. Well, he must have joked about that.
Well, he was astounded because right under his nose was, you know, somebody who's an aspiring performer. But I wasn't always knocking on his door saying, "Mr. Leslie, would you please make me a star?"
Oh, so you did it really cool. That's
for
cool.
me, it was a stepping stone, the whole office boy thing, because when I auditioned at 16 and I didn't hear back within the year about going on the show, I thought that they'd forgotten about me. So my plan was that I would do a menial job for a year, like being an office boy or working a shop or whatever, until I was 18. And then when I was 18, I was going to sign for Butlins and become a Butlin Redcoat. So the reason I was in Wardour Street at that point working for Leslie was really just to pass some time before I could put my...
There are not many 16-year-olds that have not only a career plan... but a plan B.
Oh, yes.
And you know, tenacious enough to work it.
Oh, yes, yes.
I think that's incredible.
Well, I was always very determined, and I was the scourge of my careers masters at school because they thought that I was a joke, basically, because they'd say, "Now, so what are we going to do with you?" You know, I said, "Well, don't worry about me. I'm going to be fine because I'm going to be a professional musician and I'm going to have a life in show business." And they'd go, "Oh, yes, ha, 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 ha. Yeah, well, do that as a sideline. You know, go in a bank or, you know, study law or, you know, do something else and just have it as a hobby. And I never wanted it as a hobby. I wanted it as a full-time job. And then, of course, I proved everybody wrong a couple of years later by suddenly finding myself on the charts and, you know, in these very... Because after Op Knox, of course, I went into things like the Val Doonican Show and the Golden Shot and all these variety shows.
And Aston and Wei Wei Wong.
And
Wei Wei Wong.
I remember that.
My goodness.
Op Knox. Can we call it that from now on?
Oh, yes.
Op Knox.
Op Knox.
You can only call it that if you've been on it.
Oh, but I know Bobby.
Okay.
That's right. So you're an honorary Op Knocker.
I can't even say it. I watched a clip of Last Laugh in Vegas, and that show was of seven entertainers.
There was eight acts from the 70s and 80s who had never worked Las Vegas and were given their opportunity to get on a plane, go to the States and play Vegas.
It was you, Anita Harris, Cannonball.
It was Cannonball, Anita Harris, Sue Pollard.
Now, has she got the best legs in the business? Because I've heard she's got great legs.
She's got good lallies.
Good lallies.
And she's
boner lallies.
Boner lallies. And she's and I've
sorry.
You laugh so much, your headphones fell off.
Boner lallies.
Boner lallies.
But the energy level of that woman is just extraordinary. Yeah. I mean, even like 7 o'clock in the morning at breakfast. Hello, love. What do you want? Do you want a cup of tea? I'm going to make some toast.
Was it too much?
And well, exhausting but delightful. Jess Conrad, Kenny Lynch, Bernie Clifton, Mick Miller, Cannon and Ball, and me. And that was the lineup.
I actually saw it. I did see all episodes, and I'm not just saying this because you're here. I genuinely thought. I think a lot of those shows could go either way, and it could have been either very cheesy or exploitative or very bad. Mm-hmm. And I genuinely thought when I saw it. I mean, before I met you, I thought it was very touching and very real.
Thank you.
And just very heartfelt and quite emotional. I thought it was excellently done.
Picking up on that, so the clip I saw. Oh, it was what you were all sitting down, and I guess that you'd all been shown clips of you, you know, your kind of debut. So it was you walking down the stairs towards the piano, looking incredible, looking like David Cassidy.
Well, I was a good looking boy.
You
are
a good looking man. You're very handsome.
The Bob.
and you got really emotional watching it, and you said this amazing quote. So this is what Bobby was saying about looking afterwards, looking at the screen and how he responded. And you said, my memories were mostly of the inside of theatres and the inside of hotels, but I don't remember having an awful lot of fun.
It's true.
That it was very traumatic. Not traumatic.
It was very strange. As you say, they sat us down and they showed us clips from our early careers. And one by one, these clips came up and everyone's falling about, you know, seeing the fashions and the long hair and the... just how quaint it all was, seeing clips from the 70s and what have you. And mine were the last clips to be shown. And I thought that when my clips came up on the screen, that I would react in exactly the same way as everybody else did, which was to be in hysterics and fall on the floor. But I had the exact opposite reaction to it. I saw myself bouncing down these stairs as an 18-year-old, you know, being greeted by Huey Green, and I had the hair down to the shoulders and the velvet jackets and all of that, and I'm smiling away at the piano, and all I could think of actually as I watched my younger self was the pressures that I was under at that time, because my confidence has grown over the years, as you can see now. I'm quite an ebullient sort. But then, I mean, I was faced with not wanting to let anybody down. My parents had made a lot of sacrifices in their lives in order to allow me to do what I ended up doing. I was coming to terms with being gay at that point. And in the early 70s, that was no laughing matter, because it was only a few years that it had actually, you know, been... accepted, you know. I think the ban on homosexuality
was 68, wasn't it?
Right. Well, so we're talking about only 4 years later, you know, and had that come out, it could have been, you know, the end of my career, because, you know, it's not like today where you have out gay storylines in soap operas or out gay pop stars like Will Young and what have you, and I was under a lot of pressure, and so I saw this on the big screen, and I could feel myself welling up. And I thought, oh my goodness, now I mustn't do this. I mustn't, I mustn't blab. But, of course, the more you tell yourself not to do something, the more likely it is to happen. And, of course, the TV people love that because as soon as they saw that, I was getting a bit of big, fat close-up.
But everyone was rallied around and was very supportive.
Yeah,
I think everyone had a similar moment at some stage.
I think mine was the most dramatic, though. And it really crept up on me, and it was totally unexpected. And then I sort of pulled myself together thereafter. But it was just a reaction that I really wasn't expecting. And, of course, the feedback that I got online when the series went out, everyone was saying, oh, thank you for being so honest, thank you for being so upfront and all of that. Well, I thought, you know, I was really saving the gay thing for when the book came out, but I thought, let's set the ball rolling now, just get it out of the way.
All years of being pantomime Dame possibly go.
Well, listen. I think over the years people have put two and two together and come up with four.
But
when
you just said that, you know, in 1968 homosexuality was banned, I mean, what a statement. That's extraordinary, isn't it?
It was only legal for 4 years by legalized. The time I was...
Decriminalised.
First on TV. Yeah.
You also had a huge hit with The Entertainer.
I did. Mm-hmm. I had a number two record in New Zealand.
Yeah.
With the theme from The Sting.
You're
which
big
was,
down under.
I'm very big down under. You've been reading my mail, haven't you? And
and
do you know what kept me off number one in New Zealand?
What?
How Deep Is Your Love by the Bee Gees. Wasn't that mean of them?
They're naughty boys.
Honestly.
And had it not been for that, I'd have had a New Zealand number one. But I did okay out of it. Now, before you get too impressed, let me tell you that because it's such a small country, to get a number two record in New Zealand, you have to sell 14 copies.
Stop
and
it.
I've got eight relations out there, so it's no big deal. But it bought me another gold disc.
Let's hear it. So brilliant.
You had to do a leg kick at the end of
it. I did. You just didn't see it. My legs are just so short. You're listening to my lallies. You're listening to
your
me.
Lallies.
Bona lallies.
Very nice lallies.
Thank you, man. You're listening to BBC Soho on Soho Radio, and we're joined in the studio by Mr. Bobby Crush. So what were you saying about that piano?
I recorded that single at Abbey Road Studios on a very famous piano. Mm. Paul McCartney played that piano. on many Beatles tracks. I think that's the piano on Lady Madonna and Hey Jude.
Wow.
It was also the piano that Mrs. Mills used to use and Russ Conway used to use. And then the next thing you know is that little old me's using it. And it's still there. It's still at Abbey Road Studios now. It's a very famous instrument.
Does that impact you on you as a musician? Do you kind of absorb that history? And is it...
Oh,
do
yes.
Do you feel that changes how you
yes,
play?
Yes, very much so. And it's like when I played the Palladium, first time that I worked there, I was very conscious of all the people that had gone before. You know, I'm thinking, I'm an East End lad who got lucky, and I'm now standing on the same stage as Frank Sinatra and the Beatles and Marlene Dietrich and Judy Garland. And so, yeah, I think when you play these iconic venues or you work in these incredible studios, you are very aware of the footsteps that you're now standing in.
Yeah, well, people can say that about you.
Ah, well I have actually become the establishment now, you see. Long gone are the days when I was the bright young thing, the new young boy on the block. I'm now... I saw myself in print the other day referred to as a veteran entertainer.
Oh.
So I've got to veteran status now.
You know what they call it in the record industry? You're a heritage act.
Oh. A heritage act. Well, yes, that's what they refer to the Glastonbury slot, you know, where they had Dolly Parton.
It's beckoning, Bobby, it's beckoning.
Well, I don't.
6 you imagine, p.m. on a Sunday.
Can you imagine me?
Or Salino.
Can you imagine me at Glastonbury?
Yes.
I could. I genuinely could, actually.
I'm not wading through all that mud. Unless I can have a big pair of sparkly boots like Shirley had.
Jeff Watts to carry fabulous. You. What was his name?
Jeff who?
Jess Conrad, sorry, my brain's gone.
Oh, yeah, Jeff. Oh, yes.
He can escort you.
Yes, he can be in the legend spot.
No, I meant carry you to the stage.
What a character he was.
Shall we gloss over
that? Yes, Vegas debut at 64. So how was that then? So you did the Liberace show? Was it your Liberace show that you did?
Well, what we did was our own acts, and then we got to do a speciality. Right. So Cannon and Ball did their act, and then they did a sketch about Elvis with Mick Miller. Bernie Clifton.
I love Mick Miller.
Bernie Clifton did his act, and then with some of the other performers on the show did a Broadway medley and what have you. I did, as myself, a big James Bond medley.
Ooh.
Which unfortunately, come showtime, ended up on the cutting room floor. Because they said it was time constraints. Because they overfilmed. I mean, there was so much footage from this. I mean, they could have got another two or three programs out of it. It was a five-part series, but a lot of really golden stuff ended up on the cutting room floor. So all you actually see on the program of my Vegas debut is the Liberace section that I did, which got a standing ovation and, yeah.
But for a Brit to do Liberace in Vegas,
it takes some
bottles.
You've got to have some balls to do that, I think. Yeah, yeah. And... I was portraying an American icon. Yeah.
Did you ever meet him?
I almost met him. Okay. I met him in midair.
I love an almost story.
In the early 70s, my publicist at the time got in touch with his publicist because Liberace was coming over to do some shows at Wembley Arena. And they wanted to set up a meeting between us, the old trooper meets the new boy kind of thing. And he was up for it, and I was certainly up for it. But unfortunately, as Liberace flew into London for his Wembley concerts, I flew out to Australia to do my first work over there.
No.
So we probably met in midair, but we never actually met in person.
It's a serious question. Was Liberace a good pianist?
Well, it's funny you should ask that because...
Well done, producer Nick.
Because I'm interested because he's seen as... people laughed at him and he's seen
exactly.
He camps it up. But he could play, right?
You say the word Liberace and people immediately think of the costumes and the flamboyancy and what have you. And sometimes the musical side of things take a secondary step. He was a marvellous pianist. I mean, better than I am, I tell you. And when I was learning his material for my Liberace stage show... I studied his style very closely and tried to recreate a lot of the stuff that he did. Oh, all the hands and all that, yeah. But sometimes he played like he had two pairs of hands. And I would listen and listen and think, how the hell is he doing that? And I think he was very underrated as a musician. He was classically trained, which I'm not. But in his act, he did like excerpts of classical themes. He always used to say, "I play classical music, but with all the boring parts cut out." and so he popularized classical music in his own way. The purists obviously frowned on him.
Yeah.
But for someone like myself, I mean, he was a real keyboard hero.
Proper entertainer. Yeah,
what was that film, the Michael Douglas one? It was fantastic.
Behind Michael the Douglas Candelabra. And Matt Damon.
Well, if you remember, in the Vegas show that I did, I came on with a white sequin tailcoat and what have you, which was covered by a very long, flowing fur coat.
Yeah.
I mean, faux fur. It wasn't the real thing, but it was pretend fur. And it was really quite something. And that was the coat that was used in the Michael Douglas film.
Seriously?
Yeah, and it was on loan to us from the Liberace Foundation.
That's amazing. So you kind of got the stamp of approval across the board.
They were... Yes, when we went over there, I think initially they were concerned that it was going to be a Mickey take. But then when they realised that what we wanted to present was a sincere tribute to Liberace, they played ball with us, and I had this wonderful wig made that was along the lines of the kind of style that he had. We got loaned jewellery. The candelabra on my piano for the Liberace segment was actually one of his own.
Oh, wow.
And was loaned to us by the museum.
That's...
So, yeah, they were very cooperative in terms of...
So you must
of...
have felt you were sort of channelling him.
They were very complimentary about my style of playing and my portrayal of him. So I know that we pleased them.
Yeah.
And as long as that was the case, then, job done.
That's so cool. You know something I never knew about you?
What's that?
That you wrote a song for Orville.
I wrote his big hit.
It's the hit.
It was a very big hit.
Just tell me what the meeting was like, and then tell me what was Orville's reaction when he first heard it.
He said, "It's a hit. I want to record that." Keith Harris was one of my best chums.
Oh.
I was best man at one of his weddings.
Oh.
I'm godfather to one of his daughters.
Yeah.
No longer with us, of course. Poor Keith passed away a couple of years ago. But I was in a summer season with him in Scarborough at the Opera House. And immediately after the summer season, he was going to do a series for the BBC. And they said to him, if you can find a suitable song to coincide with the series going out, we'll release it on BBC Records. So Keith's initial idea was to take a couple of old songs and adapt them for The Duck, change a few lyrics around and what have you. And he did that, and it didn't work. So I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. He said to me, "You write songs, don't you?" I said, "Well, I dabble. You know, I've written songs for Panto and odd sort of parodies for Russ Abbott and, you know, a few telly things." He said, "You've worked with us long enough to know the act really better than anyone else, the sort of things that the Duck would say and wouldn't say." And he said, "Why don't you have a crack at writing a song for Orville?" So I said, "Okay." And he asked me this on the Monday, and it took me 5 days. And on the Friday, I rang him up at his hotel, and I said, "Come into work early," I said, "because I've finished the song," I said, "and I want to demo it for you." I said, "And do you know what?" I said, "I just have the strangest feeling about this." I said, "I can actually hear this being played on radio." I said, "I'm actually quite excited about it." I said, and I really want you to hear the song." So anyway, he came into the theatre. I sat down at the piano and I did both voices. I did his voice and I did the Duck's voice. And I came to the end of the song and he said, "Do you know what?" He said, "That's brilliant." He said, "It's exactly what I need." So the following week, we go into a local studio and cut a demo, send it down to the BBC. They loved it. They booked Abbey Road Studios for a morning and an afternoon. And it was recorded there. And the Christmas of 1982 got to number 4 in the charts, sold 350,000 copies. Because it was in the days when, you know, people bought vinyl singles.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you can get in the top 10 now with about a handful of downloads, you know, then you really had to pull out all the stops. We got silver discs, and it was voted by the Daily Mirror as one of the 10 worst records ever to make the charts.
Congratulations.
Hurrah!
And on that note, I think we should hear it.
I think we should.
I wish I could fly way up to the sky, but I can't.
You can?
I can't. I wish I could see what folks see in me, but I can't.
You can?
I can't.
Look, Orville.
Yes?
Nothing that you can say will change how I feel today. I know that we're never apart. Now hear what I'm saying, Orville.
Yes?
Who is your very best friend?
You are.
I'm gonna help you mend your broken heart.
Thank you. I wish that I had a mummy and dad, but I don't.
You don't?
I don't. Pretend my sadness will end, but it won't.
It will.
It won't.
Look, Orville.
Yes?
Now that I'm here with you, there's nothing that you can't do. So why don't you make a start and hear what I'm saying, Orville.
Yes?
Who is your very best friend?
You are.
I'm gonna help you mend your broken heart.
Oh, so does this mean, although I'm green and not exactly bright, you want to care and will be there to tuck me in at night.
But I'll always be there, Orville.
The other birds laugh and say that
not.
I am. They tease me a lot and call me a clot, and I am.
You're not.
I am.
Look, Orville.
Yes?
Nothing that you can say will change how I feel today. I know that we're never apart. Now hear what I'm saying, Orville. Who is your very best friend?
You are.
I'm gonna help you mend your broken heart.
Thank you. Cause I've got a broken heart, haven't I?
Yes, I know, but I'm gonna help you mend it.
You will do it, won't you? You help me.
Of course.
Cause you love me, don't you?
We all love you, Orville. This much.
As much as that?
Yeah.
Oh, my broken heart.
Yeah.
Oh, Chris had a really sweet voice.
Thank you.
Very sweet. Yeah. So which acts kept you off the number one spot then?
Well, there were three records that kept us off number one.
Yeah.
And I will take these three titles with me to the grave.
Yes.
82.
Any idea?
Well, what, Christmas 82 into 83. Or would it have been... I'm thinking... I'm going to show my nerdiness off now.
Yeah,
I'm thinking it might have been Bucks Fizz and the Land of Make-Believe.
No. I think you'll find that's probably the year before.
Human League, don't you want me? That was probably the year before.
No, it's all the same kind of era, isn't it? But
go on then.
Shall I put you out of your misery? Well, Keith Harris's Orville song was number four.
Yeah.
Christmas Week, 1982. Number three... David Essex, A Winter's Tale.
Oh, okay.
It was only a winter's tale.
Number two,
You Can't Hurry Love, Phil Collins.
Okay.
The remake. Number one,
Rene
and Renato,
Save Your Love.
And they were the three records that...
Have you ever approached any of these artists and had a stern word with them?
No.
You must.
No. And I certainly can't have a stern word with Renato because he's passed on.
No. But you were beaten by Phil Collins in a flat cap doing Diana Ross.
I know.
that's very specialist.
Life can be very cruel.
Bob, we've got a game. Mm-hmm. I love this game. We don't play it often. We only play it when we've got someone's your stature on the show. Producer Nick loves this game. You might get a little excited.
Right. No idea where you're going.
No, I know you know. What we would do now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say a famous name. And I would like you to tell me your association with them, and describe them in a sentence. That game.
Oh, that game. Oh.
Yeah, what do we call it?
The describe a famous person in a sentence game.
What a snappy title that is.
So I have to name them.
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to say a name.
Right.
And then you say how you know them or what your association is. Right. And then describe them in a sentence.
Okay.
Ross Abbott, you mentioned him earlier.
Co-starred with him in Summer Season at the Princess Theatre, Torquay, 1981. That's my association with him.
Yeah.
Describe him in a sentence. Not what you would expect.
Ooh.
Oh,
in what way? Come on.
No, you can't. No,
oh, that's not right.
That would be another sentence.
No, actually, I should just expound there. Very quiet.
Ah.
I mean, a lovely man, but very quiet, very studious, and not the madcap, zany person that you see on screen.
Saves it. Well, he's like Lorraine Kelly's playing a character.
Yes, playing a character. Right, okay.
Kenny Lynch, who I always pretend is my uncle, but he's not. But
okay.
Kenny Lynch.
Kenny Lynch. My association is that he was part of the team on Last Laugh in Vegas. Describe him in a sentence. Away with the fairies.
I've got a great story about Kenny Lynch that Ed Stewart told me once, but I can't repeat it on the radio.
Oh,
so maybe I'll share it with you afterwards.
Bobby wants to hear that. Away with the fairies.
I mean, once again, a lovely man, but I'm not sure that he quite gripped why we were all there.
I think it's great, though, isn't it?
I think he thought when he signed up for it, it was like just a jolly that he was going to go on holiday and what have you. So every day that we were called to rehearsals for the show, it was like, oh, have we got to go to the rehearsal room? I was in the middle of watching a film.
Room service is on the way.
He's very laid back. Very laid back.
Victoria Wood.
Oh. Well, my association with her is that we both came up from similar areas. She was a talent show discovery on New Faces, like I was a talent show discovery on Opportunity Knocks. And my most recent association with her is that she was the voice of God in my Liberace Life from Heaven show, which she did for us as a favour, and was an extremely nice woman. Describe her in a sentence. Genius, much missed.
Amazing, yeah. Wasn't she?
Oh, she was a phenomenal talent.
Dinner ladies.
And
oh.
Her death is a terrible shock because she kept it very quiet. Only the very closest people to her knew that she was ill. So, you know, when it was announced that she'd passed on, I mean, it just knocked everybody for six because it was so unexpected.
Mm. And really young. But she was, how old was she?
I don't think she'd reached...
Late 50s?
I was going to say, I don't think she'd reached 60 at that point. But she was glorious. Big fan.
Yeah. Jean Pitney.
Oh, wow.
I toured with Gene Pitney. I did 40 dates with him on the road. I'm not quite sure what he made of me because I was his total opposite in that he's very laid back, very California cool. I'm a bit all over the shop. I'm a loud, brash, flamboyant entertainer. So describe him in a sentence. Unique 60s icon, actually. Because the one thing that I think you can say about Gene is that you hear him on the radio, it can't be anybody else.
You know that voice. Yeah.
That's one of the things. Maybe I'm fairly, you know, when I say this, but I do find a lot of what is out there now is very similar, you know. In my day, back in the 60s, people like Cilla and Lulu and Dusty and people like Gene Pitney, they all had individual styles and voices that if you heard them on the radio, it couldn't be anybody else. Whereas now, everyone just wants to be Mariah Carey and sing 12 notes where one will do.
There's that wonderful clip, actually, talking of Chaka Khan, who we played earlier. There's brilliant clip that is on YouTube, I think, where she was on an American chat show and somebody said, Jimmy Kimmel or somebody says, what sets apart the stars of yesterday with the current stars? And she just looked at him and said, talent.
Oh! I've got two more names for
you.
Oh,
yes, please do.
Dame Julie Andrews.
Steady on.
It's all right.
Well,
okay, Bobby.
Now you're talking. Well, my association with her is that I supported
you
her.
You met her in a newsagent. Oh, no, that was
she's parading under the name Russ Kane. I supported her at the London Palladium in 1976, and it was one of the total highlights of my career. They often say that the bigger the star, the nicer they are. And I have to say that she came as an absolute delightful surprise. The opening night of our season at the Palladium, there's a knock on my door, and I open the door, half dressed, half made up, half ready to go on, and it's Julie Andrews in a dressing gown, not a PA, not a lackey that she's sent on her behalf, but she's there in person, and she's standing there with a bottle of crystal champagne, what? A card, and a red rose in a little cut glass vase, which I still have to this day. And she said, I just wanted to wish you good luck for tonight. She said, I'm so thrilled that you're on the show. She said, I think you're going to do extremely well tonight. She said, these are for you. Don't leave the theatre tonight before you've had a chance to come into our dressing room and have a glass of champagne with me and Blake. And my previous seasons at the Palladium, which were with Jack Jones and Vic Damone, I never even got to meet them because they were kept away from their support acts. And yet here was like one of the biggest stars in the world who wanted to embrace the fact that she had support players and she recognised the importance of us going on and warming up the audience before she came on and all of that. And she was absolutely delightful. And I used to stand in the wings and watch her and learn from her.
Oh, I love this.
And that's my association with her.
Amazing.
So describe her in a sentence. Charming, gorgeous, talented. There you are.
And the final one, Dame Joanne Good.
Dame Joanne, is she a friend of the show?
Oh my goodness!
Well, my association is that I've done her show on numerous occasions on BBC Radio London.
Isn't she brilliant?
And describe her in a sentence: chaotic. There you are.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Dusty,
but great fun,
but amazing,
great fun.
You mentioned Dusty, and we're playing a Dusty track now.
Oh, wonderful! Did you know that I was a fan?
No.
Oh well, let me just tell you how big a fan I am of Dusty Springfield. She's always been my favourite female singer. Johnny Mathis has always been my favourite male singer. I've loved Dusty since I was about 7 years old. I've got everything that she ever recorded. And we recorded for the same label, Philips, but we never met each other. And we used to leave messages for each other. I've got letters from her.
No way.
I've got signed posters. I've got a picture on my piano in a frame, which says to Bobby, I hear you are truly wondrous. Love and kisses, Dusty. And after she died, she left a thing in her will saying that she wanted some of her stage outfits to be auctioned off and that the profits from the sale had to go between the Royal Marsden Hospital, where she was treated for breast cancer, and the National Cats Protection League, because she loved pussycats. And I bought two of her outfits.
Did you?
And in my house in Hendon, I had them on mannequins, one either side of my piano. And when I did Celebrity Cash in the Attic, I parted with the costumes to put them in the sale. So somebody else now owns them. But for 10 years, I owned a couple of Dusty Springfield's frocks.
I'm so glad we chose Dusty's song.
So the fact that you've got her lined up now is just extraordinary, because I thought you must have done a bit of digging to find out who I liked.
No.
But she is my absolute favourite singer.
Oh,
I have a jukebox at home, and half of what's in the jukebox are Dusty Springfield singles.
Well, let's hear one.
I'm
Dusty Springfield, I Only Want to Be With You. Bobby, we could talk to you for days, not even hours, but days. But unfortunately, we haven't got days. Oh. From Opportunity Knocks to now, what are the proudest moments of your career?
I would say three things. When I did the Royal Variety Performance, that was a major highlight, and having my parents in the audience for that as well. Second highlight would have been Orville, because it was so unexpected, and I never thought that I would be the writer of a top five record.
Damn you, Phil Collins.
Albeit, you know, something, you know, really out of the ordinary and what could be termed now as a novelty record. But I don't mind. It's still a top five record. And Vegas, really, you know, that was so out of the blue. And you get to a stage in your life when you've done a lot, but you think that certain opportunities have passed you by. And then to get a phone call from your agent saying, I've had this inquiry, you know, about you possibly playing a television show that's centred around Las Vegas. And I went, what? and I was thrilled because I know that I saw a lot of people.
Yeah.
They saw about 50 people before they whittled it down to the final
that's
eight.
Amazing.
One thing that worked in my favour is that I do what I do. You know, I'm a pianist, whereas all the others were singers and comics. And because I think I had a certain different talent from the rest of them, that's what got me included. But it was great. It was a wonderful experience. I mean, there were obviously aspects of it that were not so wonderful. We were out there when they had the shootings.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and in fact it put a big question mark over whether or not we could continue, but of course we're a group of pros and we're not going to say we're going home. We're going to dig in and we're going to do the show, and I think we're all very glad that we decided to dig in and continue.
Well, it's been such a joy meeting you.
Thank you.
Yes. We can't wait. I'm going to give some details out about everything. But Zadel, good luck, everyone, next time. We'll come and see you next
exactly.
time.
I wish I could invite you, but I can't.
Oh, no worries. I need to say goodbye. I need to say goodbye and thank my guests. Thank you, Ryan Gosling. Thank you, Bobby Crush. For updates on all Bobby's exciting projects, go visit bobbycrush.com and follow him on Twitter at TheBobbyCrush. Yeah, Zadel's not going to happen this time, but next time he'll come in and we'll talk about the next one. And most of all, thank you for listening. That's it from me, BB Lynch. Until next time, stay tuned to your wonderful Soho Radio. And I'll leave you with the foundations and BB, now that I've found you. That's what they meant to say, yeah. Yes. Love you, Soho.